Distilling the compounds that count. You're listening to Chemistry in its Element, brought to you by Chemistry World magazine.
This week, Andrea Sella lets out his true feelings and reveals the darker side of a seemingly innocent compound.
Do you have an emotional attachment to a molecule or compound? Think about it. Is there some compound for which you have a fondness? It might be accompanied by a craving, like that for that little alkaloid, caffeine. Or perhaps it's for something a little stronger, a little less legal. What about hatred? Is there a molecule you really hate? One you'd want to see exterminated? For me, there is one molecule, one amazing molecule that stands out from the crowd. And that molecule is sulfur hexafluoride, SF6. And I hate it. Okay, you'll ask, why are you so excited about SF6? At first sight, SF6 seems a rather innocuous beast. A sulfur surrounded by 6 fluorine atoms in a nice, regular octahedral array, one on top, one on the bottom, left, right, front, back, each fluorine sitting at 90 degrees to the next. And secondary school students who hear about it are always a bit puzzled or even horrified. According to the simplest rule of bonding, the one we learn in school, when molecules form, the aim for each atom is to achieve a complete octet, to end up with a total of 8 electrons in what people call the outer shell. And when this happens, everything looks like one of the noble gases, which everyone thinks are aloof and untouchable. So what about SF6? Well, SF6 violates this rule in spades. By forming bonds with 6 fluorines, the central sulfur ends up with 12 electrons, a situation that doesn't fit with that old octet rule. And to get around this, students are told that octet expansion occurs, and teachers mutter that it has something to do with d orbitals, and then the explanation trails away. Of course, there's nothing wrong with the molecule. It's just the theory that's so primitive that, not surprisingly, there are hundreds of molecules out there that do their own thing. And in the first year of university, students start to learn about molecular orbital theory and the idea that it's the overlap between orbitals that gives rise to bonding. And provided the orbitals have the right symmetry, they can overlap, and that leads to bonding. And because of this, they can accommodate lots of electrons. And SF6 is the textbook example used to illustrate this concept. The result is a diagram that is, or should be, etched on the mind of every chemist. So SF6 is actually a molecule that should garner respect rather than opprobrium. But I hate it. One of the most intriguing features of SF6 is the fact that it's inert, terribly inert. It's one of the least reactive molecules we know, resisting attack by water, oxygen, acids, bases, oxidizing and reducing agents, everything. SF6 just sits there. And over the years, this inertness has led to it being used in places where rock-like stability is crucial. When magnesium is smelted by electrolysis at temperatures above 1,000 degrees, it's crucial to keep air away. And SF6 is chosen as the blanketing gas for this process. Even at these extremes of temperature, with one of the most reactive metals in the periodic table, SF6 remains unperturbable. In essence, you can think of it as a kind of molecular armadillo curled up in a ball, showing the outside world a robust carapace of fluorine that protects its soft underbelly, the delicate bonds inside, from outside influence. And being so symmetrical, there's nothing for another molecule to grip onto as it comes into attack. And this behavior is in stark contrast to its near relation SF4, which, with 2 fewer fluorines, is open on one side. A chink in the armor, if you will, a fatal flaw that makes it vulnerable to instant destruction. The bonds between the fluorine and the sulfur are strongly polarized. The fluorine is quite negative, while the sulfur is positive. And so any molecule with a similar charge asymmetry, like water, for example, will plow into SF4 and rip it apart. But SF6 is different. Its high symmetry means the charges are very evenly distributed, making its surface smooth and impenetrable. And for its molecular weight, 146, SF6 is surprisingly volatile. At room temperature, it's a gas, a very dense gas. So dense, in fact, that you can quite literally pour it from one container into another invisibly. And this is why I hate this molecule. There's a famous demonstration, you can look it up on any internet video channel you want, where SF6 is poured into a clear tank, and then a boat made from aluminium foil is carefully laid on top, and the boat floats as if on an invisible magic carpet. Audiences shout, scream, applaud. They're hooked by the bizarreness of it. And yet, this is a demonstration I want to see banned. In fact, I want the gas banned. Why? Because the charge differences between the sulfur and the fluorine means that when it vibrates, it absorbs infrared radiation. And it does so very strongly indeed, much more than CO2. This is a potent, potent greenhouse gas. And the inertness that makes it so useful also means that once we release it into the atmosphere, it will stay there for many thousands of years. The International Panel on Climate Change's best estimate is that SF6 has a global warming potential 32,000 times that of CO2. And this value is calculated over 300 years, far less than the expected lifetime of this amazing molecule. So doing this demonstration is just irresponsible. It's the equivalent of driving several hundred thousand miles in a car. And we do this just to make an audience laugh and cheer? You can argue that the odd demonstration is insignificant compared to its industrial uses. But as the Chinese saying goes, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. As chemists, we need to take responsibility for our actions. And keeping SF6 out of the atmosphere is a major challenge for the magnesium industry and others. And perhaps they should be thinking seriously about not using it at all and consigning it, like chlorofluorocarbons, to the history books. There are some molecules that everyone should hate.
Admit it. You hate it now too, don't you? That was UCL's Andrea Sella with his case against the compound sulfur hexafluoride. Now, next week, we stick with compounds of sulfur, but this time bring you a more corrosive chemistry.
Sulfuric acid is now made from sulfur dioxide in a catalytic process first devised in the 1830s, but the outcome is the same. A strong acid that is highly corrosive and that produces a considerable amount of heat when mixed with water. This is why acid must always be added to water rather than the other way around, to ensure that you don't get a small amount of water in a large amount of sulfuric acid, resulting in flash boiling and spattering with the corrosive fluid.
And to find out the many uses of sulfuric acid, as well as its production elsewhere in our solar system, join Brian Clegg in next week's Chemistry in Its Element. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Meera Senthilingam.
Chemistry in Its Element comes to you from Chemistry World, the magazine of the Royal Society of Chemistry, and is produced by thenakedscientists.com. There are more compounds that count on our website at chemistryworld.org/compounds.